The Bad Boys of Arkansas Radio.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
Happy to have you with us today and each and every day here on the Ruskin and Zach program. Time to go to the Williams Tractor Hotline. This is with the voice of women's basketball and baseball at Arkansas, plus co-host of Halftime, weekdays noon to 2 on many of these same stations. Phil Elson is with us. And Phil, it's 39 degrees in Fayetteville, so I know what you're thinking. It's baseball season.
Well, of course it's baseball season. Did you know that actually NAIA baseball started yesterday and D2 baseball is getting underway? So it already was baseball season, but yeah, official practice starts tomorrow, and yeah, it might as well be 38 degrees when you start practice, because it might be 38 degrees when you throw your first pitch of the regular season.
That's right.
February 14th, Eastern Illinois.
It might be 68 degrees. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true.
Never can tell.
That's true. Let's talk a little bit of women's basketball tonight. You got a big one tonight, Georgia in town, and then this obviously is one of those look-ahead games because there's a huge one on Sunday. This team, you know, outside of, you know, one or two little hiccups, this team's rolling. They put up 100 last time out. You know, what do you expect tonight against a Georgia team that sort of struggled in conference play?
Well, I guess Georgia's going to try to slow Arkansas down, but every team's going to try to slow Arkansas down just because. But that's really difficult to do, especially in this building. And then, yeah, like you said, you're coming off a road game where you scored 100. You know, Vanderbilt, I think it struggled a bit, you know, in the few games leading up to that. But still, to put up 100 on the road in the SEC is quite an achievement and something that I don't think Arkansas women's basketball had ever done before. But, yeah, I mean, I guess the question here is, who's it going to come from today for Arkansas? Because somebody always leads the way scoring-wise in some way that almost leaves your jaw dropping. Whether it's Amber Ramirez knocking down every corner three she takes, or Alexis Tolfree scoring in every direction, or Chelsea Dungy doing what she's done for the last, you know, season and a half, which is find tons of ways to score and making, you know, getting a mortgage at the foul line.
Yeah, it's remarkable looking at these numbers, Phil. I mean, because I don't know if there's a men's team scoring 87 points a game. And here is Arkansas, 87 points a game this season, outscoring their opponents on average by 24. I mean, it is a high-powered attack. And as you mentioned, it moves around. It on who's going to be hot that night.
Yeah, and that's the difference from this year to last year, where really the offense was centered around Chelsea Dungy and sometimes Malika Monk, but now you got three players that are really going to lead the way. And they're so dangerous in so many ways. This isn't just a three-point shooting team. Like, they might be, they're third in the country in making threes, but they're also second in the country at getting to the foul line and knocking down free throws, you know, per game. They probably get to the rack more than most teams do, just because of their speed and the philosophy of, you know, how quickly to get down the court. So they should be known for the three-point shooting, especially when it comes to players like Tolfree and Ramirez, that they combine for like a 461 three-point percentage. You get players like Michaela Daniels that can drive to the rim, and you've got players like Dungy that do the exact same thing. So I mean, they score from almost every angle on the court. They're not just a three-point shooting team, and that's really what makes them super dangerous.
They're 15-3 in the year, 3-2 in conference play. And I mean, they're starting to hit the meat of their schedule. They're going to get Florida twice. They're going to get South Carolina again, but at Bud Walton Arena. They're going to get Tennessee down the line, Mississippi State later on, and LSU, and all the great teams in the conference. I mean, this Georgia team doesn't measure up to some of those names. We're not going to get a look ahead game where they sort of kind of where they struggle through this one. I mean, Coach Neighbors got, I mean, they've had a while to get ready for this. They should be focused and ready to go.
Agreed. And that, you know, Mike is very honest with his players and with the media about, you know, their whole situation and when they're talking about, you know, whether or not they believe they belong in the NCAA tournament or shooting slumps or whatever. They're not afraid to talk about what they're thinking. And what they've been thinking right now is that there's a chance to really get going, because they had a really rough start to the schedule with A&M and South Carolina being two of the first three SEC games. But then after that, and I don't think they're looking at this as any of the teams that are on the schedule, more or less, the faith that they stand in the SEC. The portion of the schedule, Georgia, Florida this weekend, at Alabama, at Missouri, that was the soft edge of the schedule before it starts getting really difficult again at the start of February with Carolina and Kentucky. So it's difficult to try to separate one conference game for another and say this game means more than another. But they are at a point now where they remember what it was like a year ago when they were going through a 7 or 8 game losing streak and facing Carolina, Kentucky, or Mississippi State, or A&M pretty much back to back to back over a 4 or 5 game stretch. And Georgia was one of those teams last year. You know, they're not quite as big as they were before. They're not quite as experienced as they were before. But they do come with the same philosophy they've had previously. They do have a terrific coach in Joni Taylor. And I don't think Mike will let them look past this opponent.
We're talking with Phil Elson here on Ruskin and Zach on the Williams Tractor Hotline. Early thoughts as we do, we're 3 weeks away from baseball season starting for the Razorbacks. Another USA Today poll coming out has them at number 5. We've seen them in the 10 to 15 range in some other polls. What are you hearing? What do you know very early on in the preseason here for Arkansas baseball?
Well, I think it's been pretty obvious the last couple of years that the offense may take care of itself. There's going to be power. There's going to be guys that can run the bases in the lineup. You're going to have a lineup that scores right. That's just what Arkansas has done. The difference, I think, will be on the pitching side. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but you had aces the last 2 years on Fridays that were, and you knew who was going to be, you know, who your best pitcher was. The interesting battle will be between Nolan and Wicklander at the start to see who's going to be your Friday night, but you got to feel good about your first two pitchers in the rotation. I think the question comes to who's after that. Number 3, is there a freshman that's ready to step up? Is a returning player like a Kevin Copps or a Cole Ramage or a guy coming off an injury, ready to step into that role?
Phil, you're one of the most renowned voices in college baseball, but you spent a lot
and
of
then
time.
Where do the, you trust with oh, the lead late, and eventually eventually that'll shake itself out over the first month.
Phil, you're one of the best known baseball voices in college baseball, and you spent some time this fall shooting your mouth off telling people you could strike me out. I just need to know, do you want me to take you deep lefty or righty? And second, how many hops do you get the ball over the plate?
Well, so the question would be, how many hops do you need before the ball rolls to the fence? And do I need to strike you out right-handed or left-handed?
We're going to do this.
Well, here's the main problem that we're dealing with right now. There's two things, okay? Two things. One, and nobody would believe me on this, but I really do think I screwed up something in my right shoulder.
I can't throw
left-handed. I'm 43 years old, and I think there's something up with my rotator cuff. I'd be happy to try to pitch to you if I was healthy, but I don't know if I am.
That is a gracious bow out is what I'm hearing.
And then anybody would believe this. I threw that challenge down to you before I got to know you a little bit better and knew and come to find out that dude might have, you know, had a little bit of a history playing low level minor league baseball. Okay. So I was unaware of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that might also be the reason why my shoulder hurt, right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. But I was glad to see you took the tunnel yesterday, the drive, you know, between Fayetteville and Fort Smith, slowly like your fastball. Glad that you made it safely.
That's okay, because my main position playing baseball, I was a catcher. So what we need to really be able to see is if you'd be able to steal second on me. Or really is the question, I think the real question is, would you be able to run 90 feet without your hamstring?
Oh, God, no. That's why I have to hit it out, is I can't make it to first base.
He can't run.
No, there's no chance.
He's Kirk Gibson rounding
You're
the
Kirk
bases.
Gibson. That's exactly right. I can see it. It's the story of batting practice with every pitch hitting the backstop, and then all of a sudden stepping in there and your hamstring lets you limp around the base.
He pumps his fist.
I did check with Aflac, and they said, oh, hell no, we ain't covering this, so... We may have to do this another time, maybe a wiffle ball court or something.
Yeah, it's going to be unsanctioned.
Sooner or later, you and I will be old enough where we can do this playing handball.
That's right. Yeah. Shuffleboard and
crochet. Something down at the club where we take a spit afterwards.
Phil Elson, he'll have the call tonight, women's basketball against Georgia. Thanks so much, Phil. We appreciate it.
It's good talking to you guys. All right. See ya.
All right. Phil and all our guests join us on the Williams Tractor Hotline.
Ruskin and Zach.
You go to parent-teacher conferences, right? And you see how these... You don't?
No. No, they do that. I don't go to that. No.
You don't go to your kids' parent-teacher conferences?
No. No.
Hang on, I'm gonna ask one more
time. I want to avoid a situation there. I don't know if they want me there. I don't know if they want my opinion on any of this stuff.
No, clearly.
So I just said, fine, whatever. You do you.
What are their names?
Who?
Your kids. Do you know when their birthdays are?
They're both in August.
Do you know the days?
No, I don't.
You buy them Christmas gifts?
No.
You do?
Well,
no. Have you ever bought them anything?
I have. And they never play with it, so I don't buy them stuff anymore. Do you know what's bad? Last night, the little one has a violent tendency. And he knocked me over a few weeks ago with one punch. So he's walking over to me.
Hold on. Yeah. Why is he throwing punches at you?
I don't know. He does. And they're not open-fisted. They are. He's throwing
haymakers.
Legit right hooks.
All right, go on.
So last night, this is kind of a poignant story, actually. Last night I've got some food and I'm walking over to the couch and he's walking towards me and I'm like tensing up, like, all right, he's gonna like deck me or trip me or something. And he gave me a hug. And I'm like, what happened here?
Nah, what he's doing is he's luring you in. He's getting your defenses down.
He was nice to me. I was like, what happened here?
How old is he?
Very nice. He's eight. He's eight. The oldest one's 11.
You get bullied by an 8-year-old in your own house?
Oh yeah. Oh, it's bad, man. It's bad.
And what's the other one?
11.
How's he?
He's more docile.
Is he just one of the 8-year-old's gaggle of victims in the house?
No. The 8-year-old, the 11-year-old is much larger than the 8-year-old, like taller. And
I'm guessing you are too.
He's injured him a few times. So the 8-year-old doesn't pick on the 11-year-old very often because it never ends well for the 8-year-old. I've told him, there's only one way to bring him down. You got to go downstairs. That's the only way.
No, you don't. My God. Is DHS, can somebody get DHS on the phone? You're telling your 8-year-old who bullies you.
Yes.
But doesn't bully the 11-year-old. Right. Does the 11-year-old bully you?
No.
Where's Mrs. R in all of this?
She doesn't care. She's a pacifist. She just sits there. Nothing happens. So, yeah.
I have so many questions.
Yeah. It's a scene, man.
So let's just say tomorrow afternoon,
yeah,
you're sitting on the couch watching the game.
We don't have them tomorrow, but go ahead. In theory.
This is just in a vacuum. You're on the couch watching the game, and the 8-year-old walks in and goes, hey, we're watching cartoons.
He doesn't do that.
But if he did, are we watching cartoons?
Well, yeah, last night he came in there and he had a bad dream or something. He looked up, he told us at school, he saw some scary clown on his Chromebook at school. And he wanted to, so we had, so I had to turn off what I was watching and we watched, what was it? Something.
Does he ever like look at you and go, come on, Cletus, come catch the donkey.
He did say one time, is that all you got, old man? He did say that one time. He did. We quote it all the time. Oh. He did say, is that all you got, old man? I'm like, old man.
The 8-year-old said that.
Yes.
You know, I used to question why your wife married you. Now I know. She needed somebody for her kids to beat on. And it's the old poker thing. If you look around the table and you don't know who the sucker is, you're the sucker.
It's you. It's
okay.
Ruskin and Zach.
All right, back here, half past the hour, Ruskin and Zach. More analysis now on the game last night in Starkville, Mississippi State. It's Arkansas 77-70. Matt Zimmerman was there calling it on the radio with Chuck Barrett, and he's with us now here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Derek. You guys doing good?
We're doing good. Appreciate you spending some time with us today. So what were a couple of takeaways after the ball game that you had last night?
Well, you guys have probably been over it all. I haven't been able to listen, so I don't know what all you've been talking about, but I'm sure it's been the same things. You know, we couldn't keep them off the free throw line. We played pretty good defense at times, but there were just too many times they were able to beat us off the dribble and drive, or they'd be able to get it inside the post and foul Perry. I mean, he shoots 15 free throws, you know, and he's 69% free throw shooter. I've seen that kid a lot over the years, and that's about what he is, 6 or 7 out of 10 kind of guy. You know, and he goes 14 out of 15. That was big. But, you know, I think a really big stat of the game was us going 4 of 20 from the three. You know, it's hard to go 10 out of 20, but, you know, you'd like to make 8 of them. You know, 8 out of 20 would have been a big difference, or a 7 out of 20. You know, we could have made three more threes. That's nine more points. That makes a difference. And I just thought we just had too many opportunities. We got looks, and we didn't make shots. So to me, it was putting them on the line too much, inability to keep them out of the paint. Some of their guards made big drives and scored at critical times, and just didn't shoot the ball well enough from the three. And I think all those things add up. We did a good job taking care of the ball. We only had seven turnovers. That's really good. They only had nine. You know, we're a team that forces over 17 turnovers a game, which is good. We just couldn't force them to turn the ball over. And Mississippi State did what they had to do to win there at home.
Coach, best guess, what's going on with Isaiah Joe? He just doesn't look right.
Well, I don't know. I just think that I was watching him, you know, pretty intently last night before the game, watching him warm up, and he looked like the same Isaiah. Every shot looked like a beautiful NBA player shooting a beautiful rainbow jump shot, and he was making shot after shot, and he looked dialed in to play, and I think people are starting to put a little bit more physical guys on him. I think not that in basketball now you go out there and grab them and hold them and beat them up, but they're putting bigger guys on him. They're trying to put athletic guys on him. Arkansas is a matchup problem for some people. So they've got to figure out, okay, who do I put on Mason that can stay with him? Because remember, Mason's a very good driver. But then who can I latch on to Isaiah Joe? Because he's running off screens. He's staying moving. He's 6'5". He's long. Who do we have that can match up with him? And Kentucky and Mississippi State both had teams that were longer and a little bit bigger than we've been playing, and they were athletic enough to kind of hang in there with Mason and hang in. Mason's been playing okay. It's 19-20 every game, but they've kept him from getting that 30 and 35 that we know he can get. And with Isaiah, you know, they're just trying to be physical with him. I think they're trying to hit him. They're trying to stay right in his face when he's shooting, so he has to shoot. To me, he's having to shoot a few shots a little further back. And that, you know, he's a guy who can shoot beautifully to 30 feet. But in a game, as your legs get tired, there's a difference between shooting from 22 and a half feet as opposed to shooting. Last year, he could shoot in closer because the line was closer. And I think that line moving back has affected a lot of teams. And I look for, you know, but even last night, guys, Isaiah got probably three wide open looks. You know, if he makes, you know, one or two more of those, could have been the difference in that game. He just couldn't get him to go last night.
We're talking with Matt Zimmerman here with on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach. You hear him on the radio with Chuck Barrett during Razorback basketball games. I think the thing that keeps being brought up to me is people list off all of the things, you know, that they don't have going for them, and then they say, but in spite of all that, you know, the Kentucky game is a close ball game. This game is only a 7-point game, and it's three possessions. In spite of all of their deficiencies, you know, a two or three possessions go the other way, and, you know, the games could go the other way. They're right there.
Right there. I mean, every game has been a game we could have won. I mean, even the Kentucky game, where if you look at the score, you don't think that we were right there. We lose by seven or whatever it was. But, you know, we got a chance for a 4, 5, 6, 7-point play when it's 44-44, playing in our own gym, and the roof's about to come off because of all the energy and the noise and the excitement. And we just couldn't quite get there. This team's been in every game. There's not been any. But last night was probably the one game we lose by seven. But we were right there as well. But I think in the second half we never got within about four, but closer to 4 or 5 points. So Mississippi State kind of held us. But it sure wasn't a blowout. It was a close enough game where you kept thinking, just like Ole Miss, just like Indiana, if we can get hot. If Isaiah can hit one, then Mason comes down and hits one. Isaiah hits another one. Next thing you know, we've made 4 or 5 threes in a short span. Those are games. That's the way we've been winning a lot of ball games. We just couldn't do that last night. But you're right. This is a team that's right there through it all, 14-4, and been in every game. And it sure would be nice to be 16-2 or 17-1. But 14-4 is not bad. And 3-3 in the SEC, there's a lot of people who would take that right now.
Coach, on the TV broadcast last night, they pointed this out a couple of times, and John Sunvold in particular was the minutes that that Jones, Joe, and Jimmy Witt are playing, all in the upper 30s. Are we maybe seeing some byproducts, some dead legs, something like that, with sort of the shooting woes that they're having lately?
Well, you can argue that. You know, I know Coach is adamant that, you know, we play two games a week. They can play a ton of minutes, and I do. He had success with that at Nevada, playing three or four guys a ton of minutes. I think the SEC is a tough level. I think that it's I do think that it could affect a player. I think Isaiah Joe, he's not sitting in the low post posting up. He is running. Watch him on offense. He's coming off screens. He's running. He's cutting, and he's having to do all that. And then he goes down on the other end, and we're not sitting in a 2-3 zone. We're trying to play aggressive half court man to man. He's not pressing anymore, so that helps his legs. Some, you know, pressing takes your legs a lot, so he's not having to worry about pressing, but he's having to pressure in the half court. I would think those kind of minutes could add up. You know, one reason I think Mason had a great second half, I think he had 2 points in the first half. He had like 18 in the second half. He had energy. He was flying to the ball. He was attacking the basket time after time in the second half. Mason, you know, one reason I think he had so much energy? In the first half, what was he doing a lot of time? He was sitting on the bench. He was in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. And I think that Mason came out in the second half. He had not played it. He played about 9 or 10 minutes the first half. He's used to playing 18 or 19 minutes and a half. He got out there in the second half, and he had full energy. I thought he had a really good second half. And but I'll say this. It's awful nice to have your best players on the floor. And I like seeing that. I like seeing Isaiah out there, Jimmy out there. But those minutes, maybe they could get in their legs a little bit.
We're talking with Matt Zimmerman here on Ruskin and Zach. Back home on Saturday, another big crowd for the TCU game. And, you know, as far as production goes, another positive last night. You mean Reggie Chaney gives you 8? It's pretty good. Gene Tall, yes. Maybe they can get Gene Tall going again. He had 5 points last night. I know Musselman said after the game he'd like to see a little more production on the glass, but those are some guys that maybe they're starting to get into the rhythm a little bit more.
For sure. I think those guys you added up, I think those, I said it in my little video last night, I think we were, I'm kind of drawn about, I think we had 59 minutes between Jalen and Reggie and Gene Tall last night. I looked at the, I remember after the LSU game coming home, a game we were right there, had a chance to win into the final seconds. And I think our bench played 29 minutes. And so I think the 59 minutes is great. I think that's going to, that last question we were just talking about our legs and maybe getting a little bit tired and those guys having to play so many minutes. I think if we get to 8-man rotation and get those guys a few more minutes, get them into the 50s and, you know, high 40s, 50s as far as minutes played combined, maybe even into the 60s, that will help the starters. I really do. And Gene Tall was big. He hadn't scored a bucket since the South Dakota game, November 22nd or November 23rd. And he has 2 big baskets last night. The move he made inside the paint, finished with his left hand, was really good. And I was so happy for him to see that left corner 3 go in. His confidence is going to be up. And let's see what he can do on Saturday. And you still got Ethan over there, who's 6'8", 6'9", who can give you some minutes at times as well. He's not going to be a 20-minute-a-game guy right now, but, you know, he's a guy. I thought he might throw him in there against Reggie because, you know, he played AAU with Reggie. And so, you know, maybe he would be familiar a little bit with some of that. But I know Reggie, you know, I think that Ethan is a guy that he can throw out there against some size and get 4 minutes, 6 minutes from here and there. So, you know, I think he can go 9 deep if he wants to. But, again, I know it's awful nice to have your best players logging those minutes. I mean, who do you want shooting the ball? You want Mason shooting it and Isaiah shooting it and Jimmy shooting it?
No.
For sure.
Coach, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Matt Zimmerman with us here on our Ruskin and Zach on the Williams Tractor Hotline.
Ruskin and Zach.
Let's talk to Jeff in Fort Smith. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Not much, man.
Hey, I do got a complaint. It's not about the basketball team. I'm surprised that we're doing as great as we are. I'm very proud of the team. I hope they keep moving in the positive direction. Next year's going to be even better.
Mm-hmm.
My complaint is I took my daughter to a clothing store last night, and golly, okay, so we go in there. We're looking for one specific item of clothing. The lady comes up and says, "Hey, can I help you?" My daughter says, "Looking for sweaters." why does this lady decide to start bringing jeans and T-shirts?
Well, upselling.
Let me show you.
You
what we got.
This
in.
Is accessorizing.
Oh,
look,
upselling.
Okay, now, as the father of a daughter, Jeff, what she smelled was weakness. You're an easy target because you're not going to say no to your daughter.
The pigeon.
What she saw was an opportunity, and you have to accessorize. You as
goodness.
How old is your daughter?
She's 15.
Oh, dude, you're too far down the road. You should have seen this coming a mile away. What happened to you is you got victimized. This is the reverse mugging. Instead of taking your stuff, they gave you a bunch of stuff. And you paid for it, didn't you?
But no. What's funny is even my daughter, after we left, was like, Dad, I couldn't even concentrate on what I was looking for because that lady kept shoving stuff in our face.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got to the register to check out, she goes, I think I remember you. Last time you were in here, you got annoyed with me because I kept throwing stuff mm-hmm. to your daughter in the fitting room. I said, oh, yeah, that was me. And she goes, I recognized you because you were wearing shorts and it was cold outside and you're wearing shorts again. And I was like, well, guess what? I'm still annoyed with you now, just
Jeff,
like I was the last time.
Jeff, you went in for a sweater. What'd you come out with?
Actually, we only came out with three sweaters and a shirt because my daughter
three
was
sweaters,
even annoyed.
You went in for one sweater singular. You came out with three sweaters and a shirt. Jeff, you got mugged.
That sounds pretty good
you
to
got
me.
You got reverse mugged.
Oh, it's just not right.
I understand, but you've got to be better. You've got to be on your game. You've got to spot this a mile away. First question is, why are you shopping with her? Because last time I went shopping with my daughter, I heard the word training bra and ran. I want nothing to do with that stuff.
That's a pass.
That's a hard pass from me. No. Jeff, we got to be better about this. I'm going to start
know.
A support group.
I'm on Jeff's side because I don't like pushy salespeople either.
When was the last time you went shopping with a child?
Me?
Yes. Thank you.
Well, that's been a few months.
It's been a few years.
No.
I'm just like you. I know it's their job to upsell and everything, but guess what? If you want me to do the survey at the end of the transaction and tell you how you were doing,
oh boy.
I'm going to tell you that you did better if you just leave me alone
yep.
unless I ask you for help.
Jeff,
yeah,
how about
right.
you don't come over unless I like motion for you and say, hey, come on over.
Jeff, you went in for a sweater. You came out with three sweaters and a shirt. She couldn't care less if you fill out that survey. She got you.
Somebody needs to tell this lady this is a clothing store, not a car dealership, all right? But back it down
yeah,
a couple
know,
clicks.
Right?
Back it down a couple clicks.
Hey, you guys,
Jeff, you be better
you
next
be
time.
Safe. You guys be safe. I appreciate your show and love listening to you every day.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate you listening.
Be better,
that.
Jeff.
Ruskin and Zach.
We have returned here on the Ruskin and Zach program. Glad to have you with us here on this Tuesday. And we're joined now on the Williams Tractor Hotline by Brian Bennett, college hoops writer for The Athletic, who spent a couple days last week embedded with Eric Musselman in Arkansas basketball behind the scenes on the build-up to the Kentucky game. And Brian joins us now. Brian, thanks for the time today. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. I always enjoy being in Fayetteville, especially for a rocking arena like it was this weekend.
So just how different is Mus behind the scenes versus and what other coach? Are there other coaches that would do this in the build-up to a big game like Arkansas versus Kentucky? It seems like not a lot of coaches would close rank, not allow a reporter embedded for a couple days.
There are a few, but mostly you find that at the mid-major level. I did go behind the scenes with Buffalo when Nate Oates was the coach there, and he's now in Alabama before they played Kentucky in the NCAA tournament a couple years ago, which I thought was crazy they let me do that. But you don't see it a lot at the high major level, especially before a big game. But Musselman is an open book. He said that many times to me, and you know, I got to know him a little bit at Nevada. They had a film crew follow them for an entire year when he was at Nevada. So he's a guy who doesn't have anything to hide and enjoys getting a lot of publicity for his program.
When there's a public perception of him, what the fans see, what we see, and then there's what you saw. Do they sort of sync up? I mean, he's the same dude publicly as he is privately.
Yeah, as far as I could tell, you know, granted, I only spent a big time and not every hour of the day, so you never know if you know someone, you know, totally. But for as far as, you know, what you see and from press conferences and out on the floor and what he is behind the scenes of practices and stuff, sure, he's the same guy. He's very intense, and his mind is just always racing. He has just an incredible ability to really kind of juggle a lot of different things at once and, you know, grasp a lot of different kind of information. He's an incredibly curious guy as well.
We're talking with Brian Bennett, college hoops writer for The Athletic here on Ruskin and Zach on the Williams Tractor Hotline. One of the things in there that you got to see is how some of this social media stuff comes about, because everyone in the fans see the finished product, but what's it like? How do these things kind of develop behind the scenes?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that on Friday they had a meeting, and apparently this is a pretty regular meeting of kind of a support staff, you know, as recruiting guys, video guys, they're kind of as ops guy, they're kind of there's an inner circle, and they'll go over some things, and you know, Musselman will print out a bunch of stories every day and read them on the treadmill and try to pick up little tips and stuff like that, motivational sayings and different things they can find, and then they'll come up with some ideas for the promos they can do, and you know, they'll get requests from sports on campus and different places, and you know, when I was there, the tennis team asked him to do a promo for them, and he's like, all right, well, somebody go get me a racket and a ball, and they did, and a few minutes later they were shooting him on an iPhone, and he's just hitting a ball from popping out behind his desk, and he's about as good at social media as any coach I've seen, especially at this level, and just has a lot of fun with it. You know, one thing he told me is, he said, you know, he's 54. He said if he was younger, he might not, you know, have this much fun, but he's been around. He's been a head coach in the NBA. And at this point, he just kind of wants to have fun with it and not take himself too seriously.
There's a lot of different ways to do this. There's the Calipari way. There's the Jay Wright way. How does his relationship with his players, how's that formed? What's it like behind the scenes in his relations to these kids who are, you know, a third of his age?
Yeah, I think he has an incredible ability to connect with his players and you know, with recruits, especially for a guy who's, you know, not, you know, 35 or whatever, which is very impressive to me. And they really seem to buy into everything that he, you know, is trying to get accomplished. It's like extremely hard for him. I'm sure you guys have noticed all season that, you know, they're a little bit limited in their size and that sort of thing. But they've always played hard every single game. And one thing that I noticed, and it's in the story, is, you know, several times he asked the players for their opinions, you know, what kind of defense they want to play and what kind of uniforms they want to wear, even, you know, what time they want to have shoot around and things like that. I haven't really seen that from a lot of coaches, where you're really getting that much input from the players on key decisions like that. And it's kind of a pro mentality, you know, kind of treating them like adults and giving them, you know, a sense of ownership in the program. And I think that is a big, big reason why they play so hard for him.
We're talking with Brian Bennett. He spent a couple days embedded behind the scenes with Eric Musselman last week. You can read his article on The Athletic right now, and he joins us here on Ruskin and Zach. You've done this a few times. You've been around a lot of coaches, obviously, college basketball. Where does the detail level, the preparation level with Musselman for a game, how does that kind of stack up with others you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of great coaches out there who obviously can give a detailed scouting report. I think what sets him apart a little bit is his ability to, you know, kind of boil it all down into some key points and then get it across to his players quickly. I was impressed with, you know, they present them a lot of information, but they do it in kind of sizable chunks, and they repeat, you know, some key points. And then, you know, he will quiz his players almost immediately, you know, give them some information. They're like, okay, who's the guy we need to watch out? Who's the best shooter? You know, who's the best rebounder? And it's almost like a teacher in a classroom. And then they have print out these posters of kind of the different scouting details and different players and stuff. They'll paste them around the practice gym and even put them on the floor at the end of practice while guys are practicing around them. And it's just sort of preparation by osmosis, as I called it in the story. They're kind of always surrounded by it, and they don't spend, you know, 3 hours in a film room. They're doing bite-sized 10-15 minute chunks, practicing, and then maybe coming right back over to the TV and watching more film for a few minutes. So I like the way he does that, especially with the attention span of kids today, and he's really able to communicate well with them.
We saw the post game where, I mean, he was devastated. I mean, there was a huge run up to this game, and I mean, we haven't seen that sort of emotion from a coach around these parts in a long, long time. I'm curious what the intensity level and the build up was maybe Friday afternoon as he's getting ready to do this. I mean, have you ever seen anything like him as far as preparation goes and motivation and getting these kids ready, basically getting them so wound, getting them so wound up tight that they're ready to go out and explode and play as well as they did?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of coaches are good at that. That's kind of a key for being a good coach, is being able to get kids prepared and ready and get them fired up. And I think the kids themselves would have been fired up regardless, you know, Kentucky in town, ESPN, Dick Vitale, all that stuff. But I will say that, you know, he does take losing pretty hard. That's the one thing that a lot of coaches do. But I was actually at the Western Kentucky game as well and was hoping to catch up with him afterwards. And, you know, it was pretty clear he was not really a talkative dude, which is a lot different than he normally is. So he takes that really hard. I would have loved to have seen how he handled that in the pros because you lose a lot in the pros. But he's definitely very intense, you know, loves to win. And when it doesn't happen, I think he was as disappointed as anything else for the fans. Because he was so excited to see that atmosphere there and kind of felt like, you know, he let the fans down. But I don't think he should feel too bad considering, you know, what Arkansas was predicted to do this year and where they are at this point.
You've been around. I mean, you've been around college basketball for a while. What was the atmosphere like for you on Saturday? I mean, he said it was the greatest crowd he's ever been a part of. But, I mean, you've been around. You tell me what that environment was like.
It was fantastic. I mean, it was up there. I mean, there have been a lot of good crowds over the years and stuff. And I've actually been I remember being in Bud Walton when Kentucky came down. It was 1995 on Super Bowl Sunday, and that was about as wild a crowd as I've ever seen. But yeah, it was way up there, especially when Calipari got ejected. That was about as loud as I've heard any building. I thought that place was going to shake off its foundations. It was incredible, and I think that's what Bud Walton really can be night in, night out for these big games, especially when they really get it rolling. I think it's the second best town for sure in the SEC, second best fan base, that is, you know, probably behind Kentucky, and that's just because Kentucky's had, you know, such a bigger tradition, so many fans. But when they get this thing rolling, I think it's going to be really, really something to see.
We're talking with Brian Bennett from The Athletic. He was embedded with Arkansas basketball last week. You can read that piece right now on The Athletic website. He's with us here on Ruskin and Zach. And leaving the game, just, you know, being around some fans, Brian, it felt like, yeah, people were disappointed they won, but there was also this optimism that, you know, this program can be really good again, and this is definitely the right guy in charge. It wasn't a totally dejected mood. I mean, people were bummed out, but yeah. But it was but there was a lot of optimism out of the crowd too.
Yeah, they didn't get blown out or anything. They had a pretty good chance to win. It was kind of a weird game, really, in a lot of ways. They just didn't make shots down the stretch. And when you look at, you know, their roster compared to Kentucky's roster, I mean, Kentucky's got all these five-star kids. They've got a lot of size, elite length. Arkansas is playing with a starting lineup with no one over 6'6". And you know, they've got the number five recruiting class in the country right now with you know, a bunch of kids coming in, a bunch of kids who love the state of Arkansas. And you know that's going to continue. They're going to match. Be able to match other teams and talent here pretty soon, and the fact that they're, you know, in this thing and have a chance against a team like Kentucky with the roster they have right now, I think that just shows you that, you know, once you get, you know, even better players in here, more size, more depth, then I think that things could be really special.
Brian Bennett with us from The Athletic. You can read his piece right now on The Athletic website or on the Athletic app. Behind the scenes with Eric Musselman as the Razorbacks get ready for that Kentucky game. Well, Brian, we appreciate the time and the insights today. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Ruskin and Zach.
Have you ever had to purchase the Fem High products in the store?
Not yet.
I mean, just in general, not, you know, not for your child, but just ever in life, have you had to do this? I don't think I have.
No.
I think I would remember the trauma. But you know what? I may have blocked out the trauma of that, so I'm not quite sure. But I don't have an answer for
no,
you.
No, I know. And I wouldn't. I refuse. I yeah. just, that is, look, that's way outside of my comfort zone. It's not what I do. No. I'll buy anything else.
That's a very confusing aisle if you don't know what you're doing.
Yes.
Like, I know... when I get to the pasta aisle or the butchers,
yeah, you know what you're looking for.
The meat case. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm looking for. When I go in that aisle, wings. I don't know what this stuff is. I don't know.
You know what else is very confusing is children's laxatives. There are different degrees of laxative. They range from the one I was supposed to get to blasting cap.
Ruskin and Zach.
And we're joined now on the Williams Tractor Hotline by Andrew Hutchinson, hogbeat.com, HAWG, hogbeat.com. Hey, Andrew, what's going on?
Oh, it's going good. How about you guys?
We're doing good. Anything noteworthy? I saw the clip, Musselman talking about being a sore loser. I mean, this really, really, he doesn't do well at hiding how much. I'm sure there are other Razorback coaches that don't like. I don't think Van Horn's crazy about losing in a sport where you do lose a lot in baseball, just the nature of it. But man, Musselman really doesn't hide it well when he's upset about a loss.
No, he really doesn't. We got a taste of it a little bit whenever we got to talk to him. I think it was the day after the LSU loss. He was definitely not happy. It wasn't the usual kind of press conference feel, but we really got a taste of it, you know, immediately after the Kentucky loss, where you know he was just totally dejected. I mean, he never looked up from his stat sheet that was in front of him to look at the media in the eye, which he normally does. I mean, I ask him a question today, and he looks me in the eye during the entire, you know, 1 or 2 minute response. So that's usually how he does, but. You really could tell that he was hurting after last night's game, and it's not surprising considering how much you know he hyped it up and how much you know everyone was super excited. He admitted that it was like the craziest crowd he'd ever been a part of today. So it was definitely hurt him, and I think that's kind of I think that's a good thing. I think if you're a fan, you want your coach to hurt like that because he's going to work like crazy to make sure they don't lose again or don't lose too many more times.
What did we learn on Saturday about this basketball team that we maybe didn't know before? We've been saying, you know, since we came on at 3 that it basically kind of culminated with everything that we've talked about our concerns, which was length was going to bother them. Their size was an issue if they didn't shoot it well. What else did we learn on Saturday about this bunch?
Well, I just think we learned that, you know, it's probably, I've seen some people that, this isn't everybody, but there are some fans out there that are like, oh man, this team's going to, you know, end the Sweet 16 drought. They're going to make the Final Four. You know, everyone was totally sipping the Kool-Aid. But I think it kind of brought people back down to reality a little bit, saying like, hey, Kentucky, that's a starting lineup of 5 5-stars, and they bring 5 stars off the bench. I mean, there's still a talent gap. I mean, obviously there's the size issue. That's something we knew about. That was going to be an issue that we saw was an issue against LSU. But, I mean, there's just a talent gap. I mean, Mason Jones is great. Isaiah Joe is great. But there's a difference between, you know, Kentucky's athletes and Arkansas's athletes. And, you know, the good news is the help is on the way. You know, they got 4 really good in-state players coming in next year that are going to help. I think, if anything, you should be encouraged by the way that they competed, because the fact that they were in that game, despite getting out-rebounded by 18, as you said, with the size differential, the talent differential, they were still right there in it with a chance to win with about 8 minutes left. I mean, they were up. They had seemingly Kentucky on their heels. Then Kentucky just, you know, did what Kentucky does and went on a 15-0 run and put it away.
You know, Hutch, I was just sitting here thinking about this, that you know, a lot of losing obviously piles up and can affect attendance. But if you lose, but people walk away with a story. I mean, people in 20 years will be talking about the game where Calipari got thrown out. And Arkansas didn't win, but, I mean, 19,200 and change or however many people they squeeze in there, everybody left with, like, this weird kind of optimism about, we got the right guy in charge here. Everything's going to be fine. It didn't. You know what? We had him and let him off the hook today, but it didn't feel like all the losses after football games where people are like, well, there's no hope here. What are we doing? You know, it felt different.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it did definitely feel different. I think there's a lot of optimism. I think this is a program on the rise. I mean, for the things I just mentioned, you know, the recruiting class that's coming in, the fact that he's been able to do this in year one with guys that are not his guys. I mean, obviously he was able to get, you know, Jimmy Whit to come in. And that's pretty much the biggest addition, because Gene Tosilla hasn't done much, and the other couple of transfers like Connor Vanover are having to sit out this year. But he's taken Mike Anderson's players, adapted his system and everything, and made it work. So I think fans, more than anything, were excited, encouraged by how they played against the top 10 team in the country. That's, you know, year in, year out competing for, you know, Final Fours and Elite Eights and things like that. So I definitely think there is a sense of optimism surrounding the basketball program that we haven't felt against around football for quite some time.
We're seeing this symbiotic relationship between the sports now that I don't think 12 months ago we had, where you're Musselman's out recruiting students now, recruiting students to come to the games. You see Sam Pittman out there recruiting students to come. Is this a conscious effort on the part of the athletic department to kind of reconnect with the students and the fans? I mean, you've got your coaches on game day out there handing out food to students 5-6 hours before the game. This is just stuff that hadn't happened before.
Yeah, I think with Musselman, for sure, you know, he's a guy that coached in the D League, or the G League is now called, you know, minor league. So he knows you have to, you know, market your team and everything. So he's kind of grown up in that, I think, and that helps. And just he's kind of a funny, weird type guy where he doesn't have any shame doing weird, funny videos on Twitter, things like that. That obviously connects to the students, because, you know, they're, you know, the people that are mostly on Twitter. And so that helps. And I think whenever you get a guy like that does that, then it kind of seeps through the entire athletic department. And these other coaches are like, hey, that's a good idea. Let's get on board. Obviously, Dave Van Horn isn't going to be a guy that, you know, gets on social media and does all the Twitter stuff.
There's a photograph of him waving at Calipari as he's walking out of the building.
Exactly. You know, he does do that. I mean, that was probably the best moment from the entire game, was whenever, you know, that image where he's waving at Calipari and then the Kentucky player is plugging his ears because it was so loud. That was incredible. Yeah. It definitely is some camaraderie amongst the coaches on campus right now.
We're talking with Andrew Hutchinson on the Williams Tractor Hotline here on Ruskin and Zach. I think the thing about those two guys in particular is, in football and men's basketball, for the first time in a long time, you have head coaches that don't feel like they're on the pedestal, but they're like unreachable to the fans. I'm way up here and you're way down there. It feels like the pedestal's a little lower, and I'll reach out and I'll shake hands. I'll get out there and say thank you over and over again, like we saw with Pittman when he was introduced. We've seen all the stuff Musselman does. It just feels like they're not on as high of an ivory tower as we've seen coaches be in the past, who, you know, the fans never see unless, you know, they're in a game on TV or at the game. That's the only time they see them.
Yeah, and Sam Pittman, you know, Nikki and I had a chance to talk with him last week, and he talked about that, is that how he was, you know, is still getting used to, you know, being able to go out to dinner and just, you know, shake hands constantly and, you know, take pictures and things like that. But, I mean, he enjoys it. He doesn't mind it, and, you know, of course, it helps right now. He's never lost a game.
True.
It'll be interesting to see how he handles it after he, you know, starts losing, which it will inevitably happen. But I think he does. He truly enjoys it. But he loves this state. It's very obvious.
He doesn't have a personality where he feels like, I'm better than you. I'm a guy who's been plowing away at this trade of offensive line coach for years and years, and now I get my shot. You know, it doesn't feel like he's there's an arrogance there. You know?
Yeah, he told me the other day, he was like, I'm just an O-line coach. Because I asked him, I said, when you left, all these fans talked about how great you were and how much they missed you. And I asked him if he heard that. He kind of laughed. He said, yeah, I did hear about it, and it didn't make any sense to me because I'm just an O-line coach. You know, I'm not anything special, just an offensive line coach.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Big weekend for the football team as well. 3 commits into the fold. Sam Pittman gets and his staff, and I mean, they're introduced at halftime, and obviously that was because of the recruits in town. But, I mean, they're starting to pick up steam recruiting-wise.
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge recruiting weekend. I think it was great that they were able to, you know, work it out where it matched up on the schedule with the Kentucky game, because you're not going to get a better atmosphere than that. And it kind of shows the recruits, you know, more so than bringing them to a game during the fall, like, hey, this is what it can be like if you come here and we get good. It will be crazy. These fans will support you. And I think that was great. And, you know, to get to 3 commitments, you know, that was huge. But even more so, some of the other commitments, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if one or two more jumped on board by signing day. And obviously the big one was the 5-star offensive lineman, Broderick Jones. He seemed to enjoy himself in Fayetteville. And, hey, you've given yourself a chance. I'm not going to put a percentage on it. I'm still not super confident. He probably still ends up at Georgia. He's a Georgia kid. But anytime you can get a five-star on campus and give yourself a shot, that's something good and something to build on for the future.
Can we do away with the Sharkansas suits? I'm done with those. Those are just stupid.
I don't get it, but hey, the kids like it, and it gets them in the
stands.
What do
you mean
the kids?
The kids like it. Andrew, you're like it. A year out of school, man.
Oh, wow. Andrew Hutchinson, hogbeat.com.
You're not even old enough to be these kids' uncles.
Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys.
Be good. Hogbeat.com, H-A-W-G.
The kids like them.
Hogbeat.com, H-A-W-G, beat.com.
Ruskin and Zach.
Let's see what Joe and Avoca thinks about all this. Hi, Joe. What's going on?
Not much, guys. I'm getting warmed up for that game.
When you say warmed up.
I'm getting climbed. I'm priming the pump.
Joe, that has a lot of different meanings. When you say priming the pump, what are you talking about?
Well, let's just say I went to the dispensary yesterday.
Okay.
Got me some fresh supply of medicine.
Okay.
Go Hogs. Now, I had the weirdest thing happen to me on Monday night. You wouldn't believe it. I was sitting around about 10 o'clock at night, getting ready to go to bed. I was all, you know, zoned out, getting ready to go to sleep. And I live out in the rural area. All of a sudden, there's somebody pounding on my door.
Uh-oh.
I'm going, what the heck? So I go up there and open the door, and there's some guy out there. He says, my car's on fire. You got a fire extinguisher or something? I step outside, and sure enough, there's a car at the end of my driveway, fire coming out of the hood. So the only thing I had was a bucket on my porch I used to bring up wood chips to help start my fire. So I ran in the kitchen, filled it up with water, and he took it out there and put it out. And then he drove off with my bucket. I don't know how it was on fire, and I was, but he came back yesterday, and he dropped the bucket off.
That's a good American right there.
Honorable man.
Yeah, I guess he had to be somewhere in a hurry, but he brought the bucket back. So I'm going to keep my bucket on the porch just in case another car is on fire.
Ruskin and Zach.